pianist Peter Dugan here, and welcome to this week's podcast, recorded with young artists from as diverse places as Raleigh, North Carolina, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Silicon Valley. You know, I'm constantly amazed and surprised by our young artists. They always seem to just defy expectations. Like, take Blue Shelton. He's a really disciplined kid from West Philadelphia, but he also has this passion for style and fashion. Then we have the Phillips Trio, who are competition winners, but they're all about independent thinking and creating their own interpretations of the music they play, even if that means challenging tradition. It's going to be a really fun show, and I hope you enjoy it. Oh, and by the way, if you like what you hear today, remember, From the Top is a small independent nonprofit, so please consider making a contribution to our efforts at fromthetop.org. Thanks, everyone.
From NPR,
it's From the Top,
celebrating the power of music
in the hands of America's kids.
Here's our host, pianist Peter Dugan.
Thanks, Joanne. If you've been listening to the show recently, you know that we've been on an audio production adventure here at From the Top, producing shows in a totally new way due to this pandemic. And while the news from the greater world remains stark and a bit hard to take, the news from our small but precious world here at From the Top remains really, really good. Our young artists continue to give us hope that the future looks very bright. So thanks for joining us today. It's going to be a really fun ride. How about we start with one of the finest teenage chamber music groups in America? The members of this piano trio are violinist Luke Henderson from Raleigh, North Carolina, cellist Evan Tsai from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and pianist Ariel Wang from Vancouver, British Columbia. They're all 17, and they call themselves the Phillips Trio because they're all students at Phillips Academy Andover in Andover, Massachusetts. This trio won the gold in the junior division of this year's prestigious Fischoff National Chamber Music Competition, and they won it without a regular chamber music coach or teacher. Now, that's extremely unusual, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's hear their prize-winning performance of Beethoven's Piano Trio Opus 70 No. 1 in D major, The Ghost. This is the opening movement.
Thank you.
We heard the Phillips Trio, teenagers studying at Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts, perform the first movement of Beethoven's Ghost Trio, Opus 70, No. 1 in D major. Luke Henderson on violin, Evan Tsai cello, and Ariel Wang on piano. Now, when you hear the energy of that performance, the precision and unity in their phrasing and pacing, you can see why they won the Fischoff competition this year. But most of the time, kids prepare for that Fischoff experience all year long with a chamber music coach, who guides them through the experience artistically and chooses repertoire, helps with logistics, things like that. Now, the Phillips Trio did play a few times for a couple of different teachers, but they organized themselves. They chose their own music, and they rehearsed entirely independently, making their own artistic choices without a regular coach seeing them through. So I asked them how they got such a unified sound, and they described using a rehearsal technique called Live, Breathe, and Die. It's kind of a scary name, right? Live, breathe, and die. But their violinist Luke had learned about this technique from the renowned chamber music pedagogue and guru, Mary Peckham.
The idea of live, breathe, and die is kind of used to moderate that conflict we had when disagreements arose in rehearsal about technique or phrasing or interpretation, right? And so live, breathe, and die is the idea that, okay, for these four measures, right, I'm going to play entirely giving to whoever's leading, right? And so you live, breathe, and die for them. And that way, you're not hindered with your own ideas of how it should sound, right? You're able to give all of your artistic interpretation over to that person, right? And let them guide you in how they want it to be played. After enough of that rehearsal in the smaller portions, we start to live, breathe, and die throughout the whole piece, right? And that's not just, oh, I'm following this person, this one. We're all following each other actively, and we're all leading, right? And so in balancing that giving and receiving, when you're playing the music, we're able to line everything up and play together.
That's beautifully said. When you come together to play chamber music, you have to be there for one another. Ariel, could you talk about another rehearsal technique? Expressive counting, one of my favorite terms. What does that mean?
So expressive counting is where we count not for the beat, not for that kind of rhythm, but instead to phrase. We count out loud the rubatos we're going to take and the nuances we're going to make with our playing as if we were going to play it, but without actually having our instruments.
So expressive counting is sort of about addressing how do we remain rhythmic, but in a way that's musical and that flows and has direction. And expressive counting can sometimes sound kind of silly. So I want to put one of you on the spot now and ask you to demonstrate what would expressive counting sound like for the opening phrase of the Ghost Trio.
So it typically starts, you have to give a very clear cue, right? And so 1 and a 2 and 3 and 1 and 2 and 3 and 1 and 2 and 3 and 1. 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3, 1. 1, 2,
yes,
3.
Yes, perfect, perfect. Great. So on the whole, would you all choose to do this again, have this kind of self-directed approach to preparing a piece? Evan.
such an important experience is to sort of be aware of each step of how you learn a piece. Like, it's so different when someone's coaching you through it than when you completely learn it by yourself. It sort of gave us the freedom, and it felt liberating to like have confidence in our own musical decisions.
We didn't have a regular coach, but we're very thankful that the coaches we did work with, who are Holly Barnes, Sangyang Kim, and Christopher Walter, they were able to give us advice, and we also just really appreciate that they left us the room to think of our own ideas as well.
Absolutely. This was kind of, I don't know, a coming of age moment in our chamber music development, and it was that much more special because we were able to do whatever we wanted, right? And without being told this is the way to play it, right? And so it was much more personal and collaborative amongst us, being able to do that whole process on our own.
Yeah. It's been so great to get to know the three of you, all clearly independent thinkers, at such a wonderful point in your growth as artists where you're discovering your own power as musicians. Really inspiring to hear all of you. And thanks again for that beautiful Beethoven.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the Phillips Trio, Luke Henderson on violin, Evan Tsai on cello, and Ariel Wang on the piano.
If you subscribe to From the Tops podcast, you can download whatever episodes you want and listen on demand. They're available at fromthetop.org. For the last 15 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded over $3 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Peter.
Thanks, Joanne. 16-year-old baritone Summon Da Silva lives in Los Altos Hills, California, so we arranged for him to go to a studio not far from there to record with us. Here's how that went. Summon, you're 3,000 miles away, but through the miracle of technology, man, I can see you. I can see you sing. I can hear you sing in full fidelity. Tell me a little bit about these two songs that you're about to perform.
Right. So one of the songs is a Neapolitan song set by Francesco Paolo Tosti. It's called Sogno. It's really about this forbidden love. I joke when I give performance that, like, most of the Italian songs that I sing are either about unrequited love or longing for love or something to do with dramatic love. And I think that's really just exemplified by the Tosti. And then the other song is It Was a Lover and His Last by Gerald Finzi, which is really this kind of complex examination of young love through a Shakespearean lens, from the Let Us These Garlands Bring series.
Come un santo che prega il Signor, mi guardavi nel fondo degli occhi, sfavillava il tuo sguardo d'amor. Tu parlavi e la voce sommessa mi chiedea dolce. Del cuor mi tradì. days pass with a hey and a ho and a hey no ni no. That o'er the green cornfield did pass in springtime, the only pretty ringtime, when birds do sing, ting a ting a ting, sweet lovers love. Springtime, the only pretty ring time, when birds do sing, a ting a ting a ting, sweet lovers love the spring. This carol they began that hour with a hey and a ho and a hey. Life was but a flower in springtime, the only pretty ring time, when birds do sing, a ting a ting a ting, sweet lovers love the spring. And therefore take the present time with a hey and a ho and a hey no ni no, for love is crowned with the prime in springtime, the only pretty ring time, and birds who sing a ting a ting a ting, sweet lovers love.
That was 16-year-old Summon Da Silva from Los Altos Hills, California, singing Sogno by Palo Tosti, and It Was a Lover and His Lass from Let Us Garlands Bring by Gerald Finzi. Summon was joined by Dwight Okamura at the piano. Summon, I so enjoyed hearing you perform those pieces. Just charming, charming music from one of my favorite English composers, Finzi, with that delightful text by Shakespeare. And then when you sing that Italian music, man, you transported me with all those portamentos and like the true bel canto style. It was romantic and wonderful. Thank you so much for
that. Thank you.
You know, you bring this music to life. But of course, as a classical singer, more often than not, you're singing material that's hundreds of years old, often in different languages. So I wonder if you could talk about how you manage to relate to that material so well, so naturally.
Right. So I am a bona fide theater kid, I would say. And a lot about this is I generally can't step into some roles of deep forbidden love because I just haven't had that experience as a 16-year-old high schooler who's stressed about his classes. So I think really stepping into that character of a character who's really feeling these deep, passionate emotions really helps me get into the nuance built by these centuries-old songs, really.
You know, it seems like as someone who has that kind of a voice, but also delves into character study, the worlds of musical theater or opera are just calling for you. But I also know that it's important to you to pursue classical singing in part because of your identity as a South Asian.
Right. Yes. So as a South Asian from the Indian subcontinent, I mean, we have had the strangest interactions with classical music, particularly in opera. You look at Deliba and Lakmé and then Bizet's Pearl Fishers. I'm from both India, and then my father's from Sri Lanka, or I suppose in the Pearl Fishers, ancient Ceylon, where they almost entirely get our culture incorrect. And so you have to ask yourself, what has classical music and especially opera presented about my culture, and how do I, when I'm an opera singer, want to portray that? And do I want to further that? Do I want to correct the narrative? And and how does that develop over time, especially with such a limited pool of South Asian opera singers? Like right now, Maya Kairani in San Jose Opera, or Danielle Denise in Glyndebourne, or Asita Tenakun in Toronto, really a small pool. And I'd love to step into that world and show the world that I am a South Asian opera singer. And yes, we do exist. And yes, we have this really important culture and such an interesting culture at that.
I applaud that attitude. That's just so wonderful that, first of all, that you know who is out there. And also, we should really be saying Western classical music, because classical music, Indian classical music, is unto itself such a rich and wonderful genre. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that we don't just assume classical music automatically refers to our Western classical music.
Right, yeah.
You also have a whole nother world of interests in terms of science and academia. Talk about what really gets you excited in those worlds.
Right. I mean, I've grown up in the heart of Silicon Valley, surrounded by kids and parents who are so involved in the world of STEM. And from the age of probably 11, I started getting crazily obsessed with astrophysics, the most niche pocket of science you probably could have chosen for an 11-year-old in sixth grade. And so to this day, I've been a huge physics nerd.
All right. Well, as far as you can guess now, where do you think your future is taking you?
Right. I mean, there's probably like a 50-50 chance you'll see me either on an opera stage belting out some aria or in a newspaper geeking out working at an astrophysics lab. I think right now I'm just following whichever path allows me to enjoy myself making music and then also have this weird nerdy side to me as well.
Salman, it's been so awesome getting to know you, my man. And wherever you're going, it's just upwards from here.
Thank you so much. The pleasure was mine.
Salman De Silva, age 16, from Los Altos Hills, California. Okay, so travel with me now from the busy streets of San Francisco where Salman was, to the silent woods of rural Michigan. Our next performer, 18-year-old cellist Maximus Gurath, is from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, but he's living and studying at the Interlochen Arts Academy in Interlochen, Michigan. He went into a studio at Interlochen Public Radio to record this performance of Julio by Mark Sommer. Thank you. 18-year-old Maximus Gurath performed Julio by Mark Summer. Maximus, who is one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists, is from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, but is currently living and studying at the Interlochen Arts Academy in Michigan. And Maximus, I so enjoyed that performance. It was like a dose of sunshine that I really needed today. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Now, I know that you actually had a really exciting opportunity to study this piece with the composer himself. Talk about how that came about.
Yeah, so I attended a cello camp, and Mark Summer came and did a master class on it, and it was just super cool to see like someone bring another dimension to, you know, cello playing, because my whole life I've grown up and just been classical cellist. Like, he was the first cellist I really saw, and like, wow, that's really cool. I want to do that.
And now here you are. And you also say that you've watched your musicianship actually mature with this piece. How did that happen?
I look back to like a video when I was in middle school. I was playing this and I was like super aggressive with everything. And, you know, that's not the way it was supposed to be played. And I was told that wasn't the way it was supposed to be played, but I didn't really care. I was like, I'm a play this like super aggressive.
Right, like it's the Shostakovich concerto.
Yeah. But like looking back on it, just looked cringy, to be honest. So like I just reevaluated myself, and it's supposed to be, you're supposed to be able to dance and step to it. It's like that jazz element has to be brought to it. So like kind of I brought a more mature aspect this time around.
Man, I have been there with looking back on old performances and just cringing. But at the same time, you know, it's important to be kind to your younger self too, and to celebrate how far you've come. So right now you're at boarding school, you're at Interlochen. But I know that last spring when we went into the pandemic lockdown, you had to go home. And a lot of our kids on From the Top are saying that being at home has helped them to practice more. Is that the case with you, or is it actually in some ways better now that you're back at boarding school?
It's so much better that I'm back, because just being at Interlochen, it just motivates me, because the environment here is so focused around music and wanting to practice, and actually feeling guilty if you see other people going to practice and you're not practicing.
I used to have a practice buddy when I was a student at Juilliard, and that was the only way that I could possibly motivate myself to do morning practice hours. Well, Maximus, I know that you're very close with your family back in Sioux Falls. So how does that work with you now at boarding school at Interlochen?
I FaceTime them like every day, like especially my grandfather. We have FaceTime calls every day. He's just like, you know, we're really close. I like to call him my best friend, because he's just so awesome. And then my mom and dad, I FaceTime them a lot.
Tell me about what a FaceTime call with your BFF grandpa seems like. How does that go down?
Well, it's like we do it probably 2 times a day. He calls me and he's like, "Well, what happened in your day?" Like, I just say, sometimes I don't want to talk. I'm like, "Grandpa, you got to call me again." But I end up always loving it, because I love to talk to him. I just talk about everything with him. Everything spews out, and he wants to know all the details. I can't let anything slide out.
That's so wonderful to have a pal like that.
Mm-hmm.
And a confidant too. Well, thank you for being with us today and for that really inspiring performance.
Yeah, no problem.
Maximus Gurath, age 18, from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Daily joy. Couldn't we all use a bit of daily joy in our daily routines? Well, if you sign up for From the Top's Daily Joy video series, you'll have incredibly joyful minute-long music videos delivered to you daily. Sign up at fromthetop.org and cheer up.
Support for NPR comes from this station. and from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, providing scholarships to high-achieving students with financial need, jkcf.org. From the Massachusetts Office of Travel and Tourism, offering a new way to explore, with itineraries for arts, culture, and history in Boston and beyond. The journey begins at massvacation.com. And from the Arcus Foundation, dedicated to the idea that people can live in harmony with one another and the natural world.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. Up next, a young violinist from the Philadelphia area delivers an impassioned performance of the Chaconne by Tommaso Antonio Vitali. Pianist Peter Dugan from the Top's host is sponsored by Susan and Gerald Slavitt. Peter.
Thanks, Joanne. The performer Joanne just mentioned not only moved me with her rhapsodic violin performance, she also brought a huge smile to my face because she was just so bubbly. She brought so much life to our interview. Her name is Aniga Capsi, she's 15 years old, and she's from Exton, Pennsylvania. We met in person at Turtle Studios in Philadelphia to record excerpts from the Chaconne by Tommaso Antonio Vitali.
Thank you.
15-year-old violinist Aniga Capsi from Exton, Pennsylvania, performed The Chaconne by Tommaso Antonio Vitali. And I had the epic journey with her over at the piano. That was a ride. This piece has so much passion to it, and you play it from the heart, which is the only way to play it. This is a thrill to be playing live music with you right now.
Oh, thank you so much. And I totally agree. It's one of my favorite pieces, especially because of this emotional intensity in it. And it also has this touch of melancholy, which I really love. And I just couldn't be more excited and grateful to be able to play with you and experience from the top. So, yeah.
Now, I know that violin is only part of the musical picture with you, right? You're also interested in conducting?
Yes. I always love to conduct since I was little, you know, watching the TV, you know, yeah, watching an orchestra. And but I really got a great opportunity in the summer at an orchestra summer camp at my music school, just mm-hmm. for a week. And we had just a 30-minute round of the students getting to conduct our orchestra, which was really fun. And I was like, why not? And so I signed up, and our conductor, Maestro Tartaglioni, he watched me conduct, and he said, this is actually quite good. He asked me, he said, have you learned before? Have you studied before? I said, no, not at all. I just picked up the baton and it started. And so he asked me the next summer if I'd like to join his conducting seminar.
Wow.
And so right now I'm actually studying with Andrew Hawes, Mr. Andrew Hawes, the conductor of DCYO, the Delaware County Youth Orchestra, which is another orchestra I'm part of.
I'm sure that it's only enhancing your skills at the violin. And also, I just have to say, you know, we need more conductors like you. You're so personable. You're such a joy to work with. I hope you keep doing it. Well, on top of all the conducting and the violining, you also are a composer. I want to hear about this music you've been writing. How would you describe it? What's your approach to compositional style?
Sure, yeah. So I'm deeply influenced by my cultural backgrounds with Indian music, even Hindi pop songs, like Bollywood songs, yeah, as well as, you know, Carnatic singing, and not just Indian too. I feel like we've also just explored different kinds of cultures as well. And also, I have this special thing with Bach, and I love Bach's music, but definitely Indian culture and heritage has definitely seeped into my music and composition.
Now, I know that you actually learned to speak Hindi in a rather entertaining way.
Yes. My mother tongue is actually Kannada, but I always loved watching Indian soap operas or serials with my grandma. You know, spend my time with my grandma, but also, you know, watch a dumb show. And they had the subtitles, and I was always listening to what's going on. And so I was starting to connect the words in English in the subtitles to my ears. And
right.
Then out of the blue, it just started coming together. So that was crazy, but it's fun.
That's a win-win situation. You get to learn a new language, and you get to just kind of veg out in front of the TV and
right?
hang out with
what
your grandma.
An excuse.
That's
yeah.
fantastic. Aniga, you have such interesting perspectives when it comes to the way you view your own culture, but also the way you view yourself as part of a larger American culture, which is made up of, you know, nationalities from all across the world. I want you to talk a little bit about those thoughts.
Yeah. So as we've discussed, my parents are immigrants from India, but I also, you know, having lived in Singapore for 3 years and just having exposure here, even in America, to different cultures, I've kind of come to learn of the idea that, you know, we're so similar in so many ways emotionally, and but we're also so different in, like, ways that are material, like our language,
sure.
You know, maybe our dress or something like that, something very material. But, you know, deep inside, we're all kind of the same. And that always, like, fascinates me and also kind of questions what goes on in the world today. But I think that is also another thing that inspires me through music to, you know, collaborate and bring people together through music as, you know, a medium.
I find that really inspiring. You're a true citizen of the world, Aniga. I mean, it's just wonderful to get to spend time with you and talk to you. Thanks again for being with us today.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Aniga Capsi, age 15, from Exton, Pennsylvania.
From the Top is also presenting concerts by our young musicians every 2 weeks on Facebook and YouTube. Search for From the Top on Facebook or go to youtube.com/fromthetop.
The last performer you're going to meet now is impressively self-possessed and calm, which was a total contrast to the devilishly fast and feverish pitch of the music he brought to play. His name is Blue Shelton. He's 17 from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he plays the flute. I joined him at the piano in the studio to perform the first and third movements of the Sonatine for Flute and Piano by Pierre Saint-Quin.
Thank you.
Blue Shelton, 17 years old, from here in Philadelphia, performed the first movement of the Sonatine for Flute and Piano by Pierre Saint-Quentin, and I was at the piano. Blue, that was such a wild ride. What a fun piece. Thank you for introducing me to this music.
Yep, you're welcome.
Now, ladies and gentlemen listening at home, you need to know that you don't just get that good without a serious work ethic. But Blue, your practice regimen is so intense, so methodological, that it deserves its very own radio segment. So without further ado, Blue, please give us the audio survey of your daily practice routine.
Okay, so first I play my harmonic series. Then I do long tones. Then I do scales and modes. Then I do seven chords and four keys. Then thirds, then sixes. Then I finish, and that's my warm up. Then tonguing exercises. I play Bach and a couple other pieces for tonguing. And then I start on my etudes. It may be this one. Then orchestral excerpts. And then I start working on my pieces.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. But listen, Blue, I don't want people to get the wrong impression or to think of you as someone who's just locked up in a practice room all the time. In fact, you're a really stylish guy. You've got this very chill vibe. How would you describe your style, your fashion sense?
My sense of style is very much minimalistic. I try not to go too crazy with patterns, and I pay more attention to like color palettes and textures in the clothes. Yeah, I don't like crazy stuff. I like things that are silent but make an impact on whoever looks at them, you know?
Oof, I love that. If you had an unlimited budget and we had to go on a shopping spree, where would you go?
I would definitely go to stores like Hermes and Balmain. I'd want to buy like more bags and more boots and maybe some jackets. Yeah.
Nice. I'll come with you. Oh, man. Well, you know, you probably get asked this question all the time, so I apologize for that. But there is a really cool story behind your name. Would you share that?
Yeah. So basically, my mom was pregnant, like very pregnant. And she was driving down the highway, and she was distracted by a sign that had, like, blue and, like, big letters all over it. Mm. And she thought to herself, like, wow, I guess that would be a really cool thing to name my son, because it doesn't really, like, stick to one culture, and it's very, like, ambiguous, and it also sort of makes me interesting or whatever.
Now, do you feel like having your name has somehow influenced the way that you identify culturally?
I think it just makes me not identify with one particular culture because my name is so like out of the box. So I just identify as Blue.
Well, I think it's perfect, and it makes you know, you're unique in that way. Now, you once said that people are surprised to find out that you have such a happy family. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, most teenagers, they're always complaining, oh, my mom is doing this, my mom is doing that. I don't really complain. My mom, she's, like, pretty good, and I get along with my family. Like, we're a bit, like, chaotic in the sense that we're all kind of crazy, but we all, like, go together really well. And also, I can't cook, so if I didn't have my mom, I would probably starve to death.
Well, I'm sure she appreciates that sentiment. Blue, it's been awesome getting to know you, and thank you so much for that beautiful performance earlier.
Thank you for playing with me, and thank you for having me on the show.
Blue Shelton, age 17, from Philadelphia. And that's about it for the program today. I want to thank all the young musicians on the show, not only for sharing their music with us, but also for sharing their humanity. And to you, whether you're in your living room or in the car, or maybe walking the dog down a quiet road, I want to thank you for listening. This is pianist Peter Dugan. Please join us next week for From the Top.
From the Top is written and produced by Tim Banker, with post-production mastering and editing by senior producer Tom Vagley. Our music director is Megan Swan, and our production manager is Matt Dykman. Our sound team includes editor and technical guru John Escobar, along with our longtime technical director Barrett Willette. Additional editing this week by Dave Norville. From the Top's executive director is Gretchen Nielsen, and I'm Joanne Robinson. Special thanks to all the engineers who ran our remote sessions today: Michael Tridenti at Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts, Doug Henderson, Luke's dad, in Raleigh, North Carolina, Tom Disher at Disher Music and Sound in San Francisco, and Patrick Owen and Michael Culler at Interlochen Public Radio in Interlochen, Michigan. Our in-person work at Turtle Studios in Philadelphia was engineered by Doug Ross. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. If you'd like to appear on our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, on the web at arts.gov.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the Howard and Geraldine Pollinger Family Foundation, committed to nurturing the development of talented emerging artists and sharing the joy that the performing arts bring to life. From the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide to address inequality in all its forms. Learn more at fordfoundation.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.